Hello, respective viewers. It's George from Ireland. So thank you for coming back to my channel. Hello again. I don't know why it does the time counter again, but one of my loyal viewers in Brazil requested this video saying, so what was it like to go to Eton because it's such a different world? Well, it was a very long time ago since I left there, more than a year. What can I say? Just in case you don't know, this is a school for boys aged 13 to 18. It's just west of London. It's exclusively boarding. Even if your father teaches there, you must be a boarder. You may not be a day pupil. And that's it. It's founded in 1440 by King Henry VI. Hello. So it's affiliated to the Church of England. You can be any religious denomination and go there. Since the 1880s, there have been Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, Jews, atheists, Christians of different denominations. Yeah, and that's it. So, okay, probably that's enough about the background to it. Well, it's quite a big school, 1,300 boys, and it's got superb facilities. But the boys are very conscious of being like at the top school. And actually, academically, it's not the top. In A-levels or GCSEs, it might be 20th or something. The most renowned school in the globe. And they often come from, well, very, very wealthy families, probably more financially exclusive than they used to be. There's some quite hard exams to get in. These days, there are two batteries of exams are at the age of 11, an interview, another exam at the age of 13. So it's maybe like about 10 times oversubscribed. So it's very academically selected. Now, it didn't used to be. Until the 60s, it wasn't remotely. There was common entrance, but that was really just to gauge where you were, not to accept or reject. And in the 19th century, there was no admissions test whatsoever. If you put down for it and the fees were paid, they took you. That was it. And because it wasn't particularly oversubscribed. What can I say? So it's got, I suppose these days, some superb teachers. I mean, in my day, they're often outstanding learners, the people who taught there, but they weren't necessarily that good at teaching because they'd almost all been to Oxford or Cambridge. Quite a few had firsts, quite a few had doctorates. But then again, some of these men, or a few women even, had gone to Oxford or Cambridge in the 50s when it wasn't that difficult to get in. Like when I was going there, sort of like four times oversubscribed. In the 50s, might have been two applicants per place, if that. And you could come down with a third and still get a teaching job at a top public school, maybe not Eton. And there was no teacher training required. When I was there in the 90s, virtually none of them had done any teacher training because independent schools and state schools were two different worlds. Ne'er the twain shall meet. The state had a minimal regulatory role over the independent schools. It was only to the Clarendon Commission and, you know, Lord Clarendon in the 1860s that the state had any even indirect say over what was done in public schools. They're open to the public, just like the Ritz. They're open if you can pay. Of course, there are scholarships. There are 250 boys in a year and the 14 are King's Scholars. Now, the King's Scholarship exam is enormously demanding because I've tutored people for it, the humanities side, and it's not easy even for me. I can't do the maths or sciences side at all. So I'm just astonished at, you know, one of my pupils, what he was able to do sitting that exam. And even he didn't get the King's Scholarship. I don't know how good it was at maths and sciences with all these, for example, invented languages, which would be a blancmange of about a dozen extant languages, only because I speak some of these languages, I could make head or tail of it. These days it's probably got brilliant teachers and fantastic facilities, as in, you know, Olympic-sized swimming pool, an outdoor pool, I believe that's out of commission, a full-size, you know, professional-scale theatre could seat 500, and a few other smaller performing arts spaces, an incredibly well-equipped art department, a really outstanding music department, a magnificent celestial choir that goes into choir tours of the United States all the time. Even at that day age, not being terribly appreciative of classical music, I did sometimes think this is magnificent. What a way to begin the morning, hearing this splendiferous choir canticling to the heavens. And oh, it's set in several acres of greensward. Is this gorgeous riverside pleasance of these luxuriantly well-watered meadows beside the River Thames. So yeah, old Father Thames winds his waterway along, and just on the far side of the Thames, you see Windsor Castle arising from the riverbank, the largest and inhabited castle in the world, indeed the most ancient inhabited castle in the world. What else? Eton's the biggest rowing club in the world. I don't know how many hundreds of boats it's got. It's got a man-made rowing lake there that's used in the 2012 Olympics. It's surely the only school to own an Olympic venue. So yeah, it's got two chapels because College Chapel couldn't accommodate everybody else. It's got an Eton College library. It's Eton School library with kind of ordinary books that a schoolboy might wish to read. I mean, it's got like 50,000 volumes, but there's college library. It's got historical records archives, which a schoolboy probably never dip into. And they're obviously sort of handwritten books going back to the 15th century. John Keats's Death Mask and so on. There's this famous documentary, Eton, the Class of 91. And Mr. Meredith, who was then the archivist, showing one of the schoolboys, here we have Keats's Death Mask, and you should see the boy's jaw drop. He can't believe it, that that's as close to your idol as you can possibly be. I must go and see it myself one time. I was given a couple of tours of College Library, but I don't recall being presented with John Keats's Death Mask. So some people went out there feeling they could achieve anything, imbued with just stratospheric levels of self-belief. And believing in yourself went quite a far way, went a long way. Contacts. Now, obviously, it's not all positive because there are people who are ignorant and arrogant. In the old days, there were certainly quite a few idlers. There's not much room for them anymore. But, you know, Eton can be a disadvantage. I think probably the United Kingdom is the only place that counts against you. Why, if it's such a magnificent thing to have gone there, why on earth does Labour keep bringing it up about Johnson, about Cameron, about a few other old Etonian cabinet ministers, about the Honourable Jacob Rees-Mogg? Because they know there is odium towards Eton, as the two headmasters ago, they had John Lewis, and as he quipped, and he was not a man of mirth, Eton's a four-letter word. So it rubbed some people up the wrong way, and some boys were incredibly conceited. And there was a lot of class bigotry, people openly despising those less fortunate themselves, calling people who went to state school plebs or lebs, lebbage, things like that, oiks, hoi polloi, anything demeaning. So there was a lot of snobbery. Come on, it's all about that. So it was very London-centric when I was there, people living in London and the home counties. But often people would have a second home in the Scots Highlands for whatever, shooting grouse or things. But, you know, not everyone was as you'd expect. I'm definitely not from that background. My grandparents were working class. So there were people who are aristocrats. There are people who are upper middle class from very wealthy banking families. People have gone there for several generations. When I was there, about 50% of the boys were sons of old boys. A bit lower than that now. But some people, they were the first generation to go to an independent school. And obviously not everyone's white in those days, about 10% non-white. It's much higher now, apparently. And there are a few people who are foreign. I said probably about 90% British back then. They were sort of Hong Kongers. The first boy from mainland China came when I was there. The people who are like German and Dutch, anything else, Brazilian, American, Japanese. But yeah, because you had to be signed down more or less at birth in those days. So it's rather more international now, like some South Koreans have gone there. Privileged, well, I think that's a loaded term. Well, I don't have privy leges. I don't have private laws. You know, I was taught the etymology of that by, goodness, what was his name? I can't remember his name, Mr. Harrison. Well, I suppose I was lucky to go there, but has it opened doors? A few. I think it's also slammed doors in my face. Some people have held it against me that I've gone there. But no, it doesn't guarantee success in later life. You can really screw up your life later on. People with drugs or too much money is bad for you. People knowing then they've never have to get a job, never have to pass an exam. Ben Goldsmith would be an example. Apparently his father banned his sons from going to university, not his daughters. So there we go. Possibly a poison chalice. You know, I enjoyed it and then I disenjoyed it. There were bad things about it as well. I certainly took advantage of it, you know, editing the school magazine and going to all these plays and stuff. But, you know, you can possibly screw up later if you make bad career choices. Right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Please subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Bye.